The streets, the children scream. The lovers cried and the poets dreamed, but not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken. And the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, they caught the last train for the coast. The day the music died.
This is side two, tape 426. This is February the 1st, 1980, and it's Mae Bressel in Carmel, California.
Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry.
In case you wonder if I'm going to mention at all on this side of the tape, the problems in Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Turkey, the hostages, Middle East, no, I'm not. They are in the news. A lot of this has been covered. I'm getting good articles on the area. It's certainly timely. But while the news is being covered up with a lot of those subjects and Pakistan being armed, or whether they get $400 million or $2 billion, or whether we have the Olympic Games or we don't have the Olympic Games, I want to stick to certain articles that are being lost in the news right now that are being buried that pertain to all the past research that I've done and that I think are equally as important. The manipulative process of the Middle East, I will update maybe next week or the week after. But I do want to get into this article from the Village Voice that was sent to me this last week, titled, as I say, Chapter from the Godfather. If you can get the Village Voice or order the entire article, January the 21st, 1980. I have done many tapes, past tapes, those of you that have the list, on the Vatican, and particularly last November, the series from a book, The Final Conclave, on the financial investments of the Vatican. I did a whole series when the Pope, this Pope, John Paul II, came in, his connections to Auschwitz, to I.G. Farben, to the Bilderbergers, to Prince Bernhard, Royal Dutch Shell, a very important Pope, and the Vatican is an important link for many, many reasons, from the end of World War I up to the present. So information that comes out in these trials, the connecting links of the Vatican to the American corporations, is terribly important to keep in the news and not lose sight of the international bankers and the manipulations through the Vatican. This article has to do with the trial that is coming up in New York City. It's going on right now. Again, as I say, a news blackout. There's nothing out here of that infamous Michel Sindona, the gentleman who disappeared last year and then reappeared after the Pope left. He went into hiding when the Pope came to the United States, even though he has the strongest links to the financial empire and the visiting Pope. But he was off the scene. The Pope came to the United States, and then Sindona reappeared. The article begins by telling of the death, July the 11th, 1979, of Giorgio Ambrosoli from Milan, a lawyer appointed to liquidate a bank that Sindona was in charge of that collapsed. And he had just come from testifying for 3 days with U.S. officials about Mr. Sindona. As the Village Voice said, he was the one man who would know about the financial complicities, the international connections, and the political compromises of the Vatican with the United States corporations. There was another death in Italy, a publisher in Milan, who had stock in Banca Unione, I'll give you the spelling on the paper sheets because I don't know if I pronounced them correctly. His name is Mr. Feltrinelli, and he had invested along with the Vatican and suddenly died mysteriously. And this article says the Vatican was grateful to be relieved of this acutely embarrassing association with this millionaire who exploded at the time of investigating as a publisher some of the affairs that were going on. Another man that was killed at the time of these Vatican exposés, they've been going on for quite a while, is Aldo Moro. And way back, I think it was on tape 362, I quoted from George Selde's book, Never Tire of Protesting, the fact that Premier Aldo Moro in Italy was working with the socialists and had demanded the Vatican itemize their stocks and bonds. The trial of Sindona has to do with the Vatican's mass holdings and at the time that there was pressure on them to pay taxes in Italy, so they decided to take a lot of the investments out of there and take the money and put in other corporations. And as some of them began to fail, he was taking it from various banks and siphoning it back and forth and using up this money as they were losing money, draining these banks in Europe and in the United States. And he had been given the job to make the investments for the Vatican. So Aldo Moro was dead, and Mr. Feltrinelli, and there were other deaths involved in this investigation. They keep going on. Jack Bagan, in 1972, working for ABC Broadcasting, was writing articles about the Franklin National Bank and showing hot dollars, which were mobster dollars that got into legal investment channels, the organized crime and the Vatican connections. And he got a telephone call, Bagan, that if you shut up or you'll join along with DiMaurio. DiMaurio, the journalist, had been killed doing these investigating stories, and he was threatened. Jack Bagan was taken to the United States and given a tour of various cities, was kidnapped, and then was returned back safely and evidently discontinued the investigations. But then there was another witness, Angelo Serino, who was shot to death, mafia style. And he's the man who had gone to newsman Bagan with the story that Luciano, of organized crime, one of the mobsters from Italy, had worked with Sindona, who worked with the mobsters in the United States and Europe and with the Vatican banks. He was killed. There have been judges and other people in Milan and newspaper reporters. I have a list of the various Vatican-related deaths. Maybe we'll do just one tape on that. But this article brings out three or four of them just in this article this last January, just last week. Now, Sindona is wanted on 99-count indictment. This is the trial that's going on, where the witnesses are being wiped out, charged with bribery, perjury, falsifying bank records, fraud, embezzlement, and so forth. The Franklin National Bank went under $45 million, which was, quotes, misapplied. And the important thing of this missing $45 million is, did it also go into right-wing organizations, what we call missing robberies at airports and so forth? How much of this is going to fund right-wing organizations? I mentioned briefly a few weeks ago, and I want to do a little more on that train robbery in England linked to Otto Skorzeny and the International Odessa Nazi Network. There was an article in the Washington Post last week, airline robbed of $2.2 million in Rome. These thieves that are doing these so-called daring robberies, this was a Swiss Air DC-9 plane, are not caught. The money can be used for guns, narcotics, and the police are in collusion and don't manage to ever find these great thieves. The largest burglary or robbery that ever took place was that Lufthansa airplane in New York City at Kennedy Airport. I also want to do tapes on that. But getting back to the Sindona article, he had misapplied, in quotes, $45 million. Sindona's trial was supposed to begin this last September, 1979. Ambrosoli was murdered July the 11th. The man who had this information for him on crime and the Vatican, the connecting links. And then Sindona disappeared. They tried to blame the leftists for his disappearance. They tried to make it look as if his life would be in danger if he goes to Europe for trial. But the article gives various motives of why he was kidnapped. One, the mafia wanted to keep him from blabbing, and the other is to find out where their funds are. That's a good question, because always the missing funds, millions and millions of dollars, they're not accountable, and the worst he'll get is 1 or 2 or 3 years, and the fund has gone to, in quote, the cause. This article of The Voice says that Milan now is in a psychological state of siege, and I believe it is, because Sindona played a leading role, according to this author, in the misuse of power. The 30-year arrogant misuse of power that is coming to a head in Italy as well as in other countries, such as the Shah of Iran and Somoza, and these various figures are now wearing bulletproof clothes and so forth. And the links, not only of their taking the money and wealth from these individual nations and citizens, but their links to organized crime and the Central Intelligence Agency is surfacing individually in each of these different countries, and it's happening in Italy right now. The article tells the background of Sindona. He went to the University of Messina. He was in Sicily in 1943 when it was invaded by the Allies, and he started to use Allied trucks to haul grain back and forth. And this was his early association with the mafia in Sicily, and that was Lucky Luciano's home base. And then when the United States government came there and the OSS, they later incorporated these men into the Central Intelligence Agency. And as soon as the war was over, the mafia organized crime was in business and was incorporated with the United States Army. And they were on their way to taking power throughout the whole world and working their way up through Justice Department, police departments, even the Supreme Court. This article tells how Sindona went with a letter from the bishop of his hometown in Sicily, the bishop of Messina, and was recommended to Milan. He moved there in 1947. 47 and 57 are very important years. 47 was when the National Security Council was formed in the United States, patterned after Hitler's Gestapo. That was the year that very important congressmen, Gerald Ford, Richard Nixon, and George Smathers, and the whole Cold War group were put in by various corporations and the youth organizations and the military from around the country and would vote gung-ho on every CIA adventure. They never put, I think there's been 47 bills in Congress to curb the CIA. They've always been turned down, and now they're more powerful than ever. 47 was an important year because he went to Milan, and later that Milan Mafia, again, the Montini story that's written in The Final Conclave and the Bormann Brotherhood and many books that I have, the Milan Mafia was the headquarters of Montini, the Secretary of the Vatican, who later went to be the Pope when Pope John the 23rd died. In 63, he became the Pope, part of this Milan Mafia. And it was in 47 when Sindona went there with Montini's, that was his headquarters there, and they were to be working together very shortly. In 1959, Sindona gained control of a bank, Privata Finanziaria, again, not pronounced correctly, I'm sure. Then he got another bank, Banca de Messina, in his hometown. And by 1960, he had owned more than one bank, and he was setting up an international network, which he called Basis for Peace. Now, this international ambition or an international network for peace has become sort of a code word, like when the Russians no longer exist. Once we conquer the Russians, we'll have peace. It's like Richard Nixon referring on the White House tapes always to going back the Bay of Pigs, which seems for the researchers to mean the Kennedy assassination. He set up through his banking shenanigans from Sicily to Milan, and later with the Pope and the Vatican, what he called his network, international network of peace. Sindona wasn't just going to stay in Milan and be an Italian. He bought a bank in Geneva, the Finabank, and that's where he begins to set up his connections with the Vatican. The Vatican had 20% share in Finabank. Then he bought a company in Liechtenstein. He had chemical works, and then he went on to convert other financial paradises and set up offices and headquarters in this newspaper article. Village Voice mentioned some, and I have his connections in other places. Sindona was then setting up headquarters in Luxembourg, Panama, Cayman Islands, Liberia, and had deals with German companies in the United States, Canada, France, Spain, Mexico, in the Bahamas. He had link to 146 companies or corporations by the end of the 1960s. After John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King were killed, Richard Nixon was in office in 68. Sindona linked with 146 companies, sat on 16 board of directors, and had important connections to Swiss banks and Liechtenstein and Luxembourg, those connections. Now, this article on The Godfather in the Village Voice, chapter from The Godfather, asked the question, who was Michele Sindona? Where did he get all this money from? And I've been stressing on the past weeks of tapes the millions and millions of dollars taken from Bormann and Montini's passport down to Argentina, into the Swiss banks, that once Eva Perón was dead in 1952, the resurgence of these people that could use the Nazi money from World War II that begins to surface. And he asked the question, where does Sindona get his money from? And then he partly answers that there were rumors or talk that there were Howard Hughes connections. Rumors that he was connected with Howard Hughes, a front for Howard Hughes. Now, remember these days, again, Howard Hughes was active in Hollywood, in Los Angeles, in aerospace until 1957. He disappeared. He was drugged and kept in sound studios with Perrier water and chocolate bars, sitting on a toilet all day, incoherent, from 57 to 66, and then not seen again after 66. So as this is taking its muscles or organization, if he was a front for Hughes, and if Hughes is being drugged or seduced or getting ready to be literally kidnapped, this Hughes organization was pouring this money into these connections. And in this article, chapter from The Godfather, they link him not only to Hughes, but it said other rumors were more ominous. gossip linked him with the mafia. Well, Hughes and the mafia aren't very far apart. Robert Mayhew, using the Hughes organization from 1960 on, was combined for the Central Intelligence Agency with Carlos Marcello, Fratriano, Gambino, the Rosselli, the entire organized crime group from Vegas, New York, were working, Sam Giancana, were working with the CIA, with Howard Hughes' organization, and the mafia. So he asked the question, Brian Rostron, in the Village Voice, was the rumor right that the money came for Hughes, or more ominous, the mafia, but doesn't make the connections that Hughes, mafia, CIA are one. And if I have to repeat that over and over again, maybe when you see these articles, you will begin to realize that. Because he goes on to quote Sindona, who was saying that 90% of all the money I use is someone else's. Now, Sindona is very much like William Taub. There's a Yiddish word called a schlepper. A nicer word around Hollywood or in the intelligence system is a gopher. Go for this, go for that, do this or that. Another word is the bag man. But they're even more important than that, because these men like Taub and Sindona sit at the pillars of power. They move in and out with the highest corporations and boardrooms and with the lowest hoodlums, and they weave. Their life is woven around millions and billions. They're handling in strange banks with strange people, but always the same names and the same organizations. That's why the connection of the Tao book that I finished last week and the Village Voice article coming this week are so important. Now, they talk about the famous patrons and the portfolio. This is the Village Voice article that Mr. Sindona had, and his most famous patron was the Vatican, that he had the portfolio for $2 billion of their securities, and he took over Milan's Banca Unione. First he took that, then other major banks, and he worked with the Vatican and began to take the investment of some of the money that they had that was going to be taxed in. It was a lump sum given to them by Mussolini to stay neutral during World War II. They were given land and utilities and power companies, waterworks, and so forth. They were to give this money to Mr. Sindona to make his international banking connections. They had problems with, in quotes, the left. The worst they had was that Mr. Feltrinelli, and then he was a publisher in Milan, and then he mysteriously died. And as I said before, quoted from this article, the Vatican was grateful to be relieved of him. And then they were making investments all over the world. And, of course, one of their most famous pieces of property, which they own totally, is the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C. The large holdings of the Vatican are called the Societe Generale Immobiliare. I have that described November 24th, 1978. That's tape 364 about the property, the Vatican money that was to become diversified. They bought the Rome in the Hilton Hotel, the Pan Am building, the Champs-Élysées, and so forth. They took a lot of that money and dumped a lot of it on the stock exchange in Montreal, Canada. I received a sheet from a financial publication. One of the subscribers from the tape sends me these financial reports, and there's an article about silver. I don't know if this is the rough report or not. It has the date here, early January 1980. When you send me articles, put the date and the name of the publication so I'll be able to give it credit exactly where it came from. But in this particular article, it's a story of the silver market going up and down, and how the early market was bounced around. And it goes into a story that the Rothschild Bank apparently made some pretty big loans to Michael Sindona, or Michelle Sindona, depending on how you pronounce it, of Franklin National Bank fame. And Mr. Sindona, somewhere along the line, managed to acquire 80 million ounces of silver. Obviously, he hadn't been holding it very long, or he wouldn't have gotten into trouble. In any event, the Rothschild Bank, either by calling in the loans or simply getting the silver from Sindona, in some way was able to dump it onto the market, and of course the prices tumbled. And at the same time we stopped buying silver, Mr. Hunt from Texas stopped buying, and the recession began to make itself felt. This goes into the connection of the Rothschild Bank to Michelle Sindona, their endless connections of power and power people, and manipulation of the market that are linked to this man and to the Vatican. Now, Sedona became the great papal financial advisor, and by 1974, the Vatican had lost $45 million. The Pope recently said to his group of cardinals that he got together when he came home from the United States that the Vatican had lost $90 million. And again, I repeat on purpose, did this money go into other causes? And they're saying they, in quotes, lost it. It really would be hard for the Vatican with blue chip stocks going up and up, and all they're buying is blue chip stocks and investments of gold and silver. It's really hard to see how they could lose that money unless people were in a position to say, take it out. And maybe Mr. Sedona didn't lose $45 million for the Franklin National Bank. Maybe it went into other causes, and they're asking the question, where did it go? Maybe if they look a little further, they'll find that it did indeed have a route and wasn't completely lost. Sedona came to the United States in 1971. That was just in time for the Bennett offices, the Mullen offices, to be opened in Washington, D.C. for the re-election of the president in 1972. This article talks about the offer of $1 million to Maurice Stans and Richard Nixon. I had also put that on a tape in November of 78, the time of Watergate and the elections of the president of the Vatican through Mr. Sedona, was offering $1 million cash to Maurice Stans, who also lived at the Watergate Hotel. And this Village Voice article goes into the promotion of Mr. Sedona speaking at various organizations, lectures at Columbia University, and as a famous financier, he was quite respectable going around the country. He set up deals in Chicago, Illinois, through a Oxford Electric Company, Long Island, the Interphoto Corporation, Pittsburgh, the Seaport Corporation, Auto Parts, Ann Arbor, Michigan, the Argus Corporation for optical equipment and cameras, and Argus controls Canada's Seaway hotel chains. According to these stories, again, Sedona didn't do well, and he began to lose money. He used to buy cheap, build up, and then sell. And according to the story, he's under arrest because as he began to lose from one place, he'd pull it in from another bank that he controlled to cover those losses. And then they would swing it to the other bank, and he kept taking from one to the other, moving it around until it finally caught up with him. The few businesses that he bought that went under, he covered by moving the money around and around, and eventually they found that some of these places were missing money that he was putting into losing businesses. Now, Sedona had one trouble. He said the Security Exchange Commission got on him and wanted to know whose money it was. And he said they were perfectly respectable people, but they don't want to say where their money's coming from. They tried to pin who was investing all this money with Sedona, that he was moving around as an international banker. Then he got the chairman of Franklin National Bank in trouble. He took over that bank, and the people working for him began to cover some of his manipulations of his investments, his selling off. And I won't go into all the details of it. The main point is that he tried to merge various banks and companies and cover losses and investments, always concealing how he got started and where his money really came from. This character, I can't believe, will go to jail. He knows too much, and he's too much linked to the Vatican. They'll probably put him on a lot of probation. In January 74, just when his bank in New York was going under for $45 million, he was entertained by the American Club of Rome and John Volpe, U.S. ambassador to Italy, who came back for a cabinet position in the United States, presented Sedona as the man of the year, as a great figure, as a financial investment broker doing such a wonderful job. In 1967, Interpol informed the Italian police that they had information, they said it was unverified, but nobody bothered to verify it, of illicit movement of depressants, drugs, stimulants, and hallucinogenic drugs going from Italy, between Italy and the United States, and possibly other European countries. This is in 1967, and this was just when the anti-war movement was going, the protesters, the hippies, the rock music starting out, and drugs were flooding the streets. And one of the four people named among the narcotics and stimulants and hallucinogenic drugs like LSD and so forth was Michel Sedona. Interpol and, of course, Nixon did nothing about that, but in 1967, Interpol had informed the Italian police of this. Sedona was also linked with black money. That's known in the Central Intelligence Agency, the Defense Intelligence Agency, as assassination money. Interpol and newspapers in Italy linked him with black money. usually associated with murders, and profits of organized crime, and this hidden money that Sedona traveled with, as I say, is important because he was selected by the Pope to make the investments for this Pope, Montini, who also worked with the Nazi mafia that were down in South America, gun running, organized crime, and Montini was in the OSS, later the CIA, a Pope actually in the OSS, and Sedona, his bagman, was linked to depressants, hallucinogenic drugs, stimulants, and black money. Also, this article in the Village Voice refers to Sedona and the mafia, that Carlo Bordini, who was Sedona's right-hand man, when he pleaded guilty to bank fraud, told the Italian newspapers Michele Sedona was and still is one of the mafia bankers, the route through which organized crime money passes across the Atlantic. Here's a man working with Rockefeller's, Rothschild's, Chase Manhattan, the General Motors, the Watergate, the Pan Am, all of these major corporations, and linked to money and drugs traffic from Europe to the United States and back and forth. As I said earlier, Sedona was reported by ABC reporter Jack Bagan in Italy as having hot dollars tied to mobsters, illegal investment channels, and so forth. Now, finally, in this article, there's a subject that is dear to my heart that I briefly mentioned, and I'll close with that. He suggested a 1957 Mafia Summit meeting at the Grand Hotel de Palme in Palermo, Italy, and Brian Roston, who wrote the article, said this is where the reorganization of the mob financiers took place, and he clearly implied that Sedona was their banker for their hot dollars, that Michele Sedona was the banker for hot dollars, and the meeting in 1957 of the Mafia Summit was in Palermo, Italy. As I said before, this was written up in the Gemstone Files by Bruce Roberts. Many of you have it. It's an important date. The Appalachian meeting in New York City with the American mobsters that met that identical year that they were meeting in Palermo. They were meeting in the Appalachia area, and they decided that instead of fighting each other in the United States, breaking each other's turf or breaking each other's backs, that they would divide the United States into different sections and work together. And then in 1957 is when the Hughes organization began to take over the body of Howard Hughes, and the neo-Nazi and the Nazi movement with NASA, the space satellites, the communications, the CIA, the drug market, put Howard Hughes from 1957 to 1966 into a stupor in and out of the dining room of the Beverly Hills Hotel or the studios, where people could see that he was loonier, drugged, crazy, thin, off his rocker. So by 1966, Howard Hughes was put on that train with CIA agents and John Rosselli of organized crime and taken away. Mr. Taub said he never saw Hughes after 66. He doesn't ask why, and you can bet your best, your bottom dollar, why, but he was taken to Boston, again the home of Robert Mayhew and a lot of the assassination teams, and these tapes are played in Boston now. This was a hub of activity for the treatment of where Howard Hughes was given whatever it was. They brought a doctor from Florida, and after that, Hughes was never physically really seen again. He had many doubles, but not Howard Hughes. At the end of the line, for all purposes, for the man historically known as Howard Hughes, was Boston in 1966. Then a body came back on a train dark of night, moved into Vegas, picked up this money, and this article in the Village Voice goes on to say that a lot of the money for Sedona comes from the United States investments, from mafia skimming money in the United States, and that indeed would be true if he was linked to the Hughes organization to Vegas as the bag man. Now, as I say, all this missing money that he's charged with may not actually be missing. It may have been deployed to other places, and I'm sure that will never come out. He'll be charged with missing money, but it's a wonderful way for the mobster or the CIA to allocate themselves $45 million at the expense of Franklin National Bank or other banks in Italy and use it for other purposes, which multiplies the amount of weapons they can buy from a man like Mr. Cummins in England with his 40 million rounds of ammunition. In other words, they can arm private armies with this amount of money and keep buying weapons and buying weapons until the whole world is armed, which was the goal of the Minutemen. They have arms and armies every 20 miles apart across the entire United States. my time is up, and these are broad concepts, but if you have the tapes, you can play them over and over, and if you hear it on the radio, you can order the cassettes. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. I'll be singing.